When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Julia Simic, professional football player for West Ham United Women.
Julia, did you always know you were going to become a professional football player?
Yeah, that was always the plan. I didn't really have a plan B.
Okay.
So luckily it worked out at the end.
Yeah.
But now, obviously, now I studied next to football and graduated, did my school properly and everything. But to be honest, there was not really another thing in life that, I don't know, I was as passionate about as I've been with football for all my life. So, you know, I set everything on the card, football.
Were you always a good player as a kid?
Yeah, obviously I played with boys most of my childhood time life. I played with boys until I was 16. So I started with 6 or 7. I think I have the same career or history as a child. Like every boy has like started early with, yeah, I think I was 6 when I started in a club and then played with boys for all, yeah, my childhood career and until I was 16. And obviously, yeah, playing with the boys and competing on a proper high level with them, obviously everyone saw there's a little bit of talent there. And I could really compete with them, like from a technical standpoint. At one point, they just grew and were so much stronger than me physical. Mm. So this was when it got really, when I struggled as well, when it got really hard to play against them when they grow with 15, 16 years. And then I decided as well, I have to move now and play with girls or with play with women. Mm. And, but yeah, I think you could see I was passionate and luckily I had some talent as well. So yeah.
When you first decided that you wanted to, that you were interested in football and you wanted to play at a higher, the highest level you could, and you spoke to your parents or whatever, they just took you to go and play with a boys team because there were no girls teams around.
I think it was a lack of this as well. Yeah, so obviously the structures weren't really there for young girls to play football with girls.
Yeah.
So if you wanted to play, obviously there were some girls teams, but that was more about like fun and joking around, and I never wanted it. So when I played football, even when I was 8, 9 years old, I wanted to win, you know. Yeah. So I think you could see this really competitive side in me from really early on. Mm. So that wasn't like, I didn't have to convince my parents that I want to play football. So I just turned up and said, like, I have a schoolmate in the school class who played as well. So I just went with, I think it was a girl, yeah, went with her to training one day. And this is when my career started. And I think as a kid, you don't really think about what you do. Is it a male or female sport? You just do what you like, right? And for me, it's always been football.
And there were, and so it's you and one other girl who played with the boys. Because you're from Firth, right? Which is quite a big town.
No, it's not so big.
But there, but it's, what is it, 100,000 people or something? But
something.
So there were no kind of dedicated facilities for girls to play.
Yeah, not really. I think now the structure's got a little bit better, but back then it was something really outstanding if you were a girl and wanted to play football, right? So, but when you're 6 or 7, I think that's not really a big thing to play with boys because you're just surrounded. Like girls play with boys, they're the same physical
size
at the same level. So I don't know, that wasn't really a problem at this age. It it became a little bit more, I would say, a little bit more as a problem when I got older. So when you start being a teenager and things like this, and then all of a sudden, oh, there's a girl. Mm. Whereas early on, everyone thinks, oh, at one point she doesn't want to play anymore anyway.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. But you stuck at it and carried on.
Yeah.
And so, when you moved to Bayern Munich when you were 16, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
And so there were women's teams there ready for you to go and play with at that point.
Yeah, but that was already like a women's team. It was not like a youth team anymore. It was a women's team. So I got from the 16-year-old boys team to a first division Bundesliga team women.
Yeah.
So there was not, for me, I never played with girls in my age. So I just, apart from the youth national teams, obviously, but I obviously came like from the boys team to the women's team.
And I remember you saying to me when we met before that when you were growing up, all the players you looked up to were actually men.
Mm-hmm,
and there was no access to women's football to watch as a kid. Is that right?
Exactly. I think this changed a little bit when social media became a little bit bigger. So all of a sudden you streamed games, or you could see, you could get informations from women football teams as well, or from their results. So I didn't really know what it is like, how professional women's football looks like, if there's even a professional women's football at this time. And sometimes you could have seen the national team playing in TV, but that was it. So I didn't really know any female player at this time, to be honest.
So are you aware that now you're kind of someone to look up to for lots of young women all around the world, basically?
And I think this is a really good thing to have. It's not just me, but there are a lot of young girls aiming to be like, don't know, a Lucy Bronze or Alicia Lehmann, a big player from Switzerland. They finally have female role models now, and because they can see them playing, they can see them interacting with them, they can see them just doing what they love, and it's football, and still being seen. And I think this is, or see them playing in front of a big crowd as well. So that wasn't even possible like 20 years ago. So that women play in front of 77,000 people in Wembley.
Yeah.
So just this big growth of women's football is, I think, for the younger generation, so important to bring young girls to play football.
It never obviously sort of stopped you or put you off. Not, you didn't ever make the connection and go, well, hang on a minute, I never see women playing football professionally. so I don't know if I can still do this. You just carried on and just always assumed that it would be there for you.
Yeah, I think until I was 10, I wanted to play in the men's Bundesliga.
Yeah.
Because I always thought like I would be good enough at one point, I think. No, but not, obviously that was a little bit delusional. But yeah, I think it wasn't only just thinking about what you will become at one day. It was just more at this time, I just loved what I did with football. And I had so much fun with playing. And when you ask boys with 10, 11, 12 years, you don't really think of earning a lot of money or, no. don't know, having this kind of lifestyle or
You're
something.
You're doing it because you love it.
Exactly.
Basically.
And this was always, I think, the same enjoyment or joy and happiness when I played. Like it was for every boy I played with or maybe even more. I don't know, because at one point, obviously, I recognize or obviously I had this all the time that people were surprised that I can play with boys. So this might have motivated me even more to always show them that I can play with them for a long time as well, and that I am at the same level as the boys are, because some of them obviously also said at the beginning they always laughed about me, oh, there's a girl playing football, and when I wanted to play with the boys, when they didn't know me, they wouldn't let me play with them, but as soon as I could have played and they would let me play with them, it was always about proving that I'm good enough and that I can play football as well as a girl. So that was always a little bit of a, don't know, battle.
Yeah, I can imagine. It's a lot harder for you.
Yeah, and I think this changed a little bit, that girls playing football now are still something special, I think, but not as special or, something surprising as it was when I was a young girl. So now I think it becomes a little bit more normal, but just because you can see women's football everywhere now. And I think this is the main goal that we all have with, don't know, using every single platform to make women's football bigger and more normal. And it's just a normal sport that girls can play as well.
What and how did you signing for Bayern Munich as a 16-year-old? How did that happen?
To be honest, the coach at this time just called me at one point. I think I was 15 or something. And then
who were you playing for at the time?
At the boys' team back in Nuremberg, where I'm from, and I played some national team games back then, and obviously the people around your area knew your name already a little bit. So there's a girl playing football, quite good and a good level. And then all of a sudden, obviously, you get the interest from bigger clubs as well. And then, when Bayern Munich calls you, I think I told everyone who didn't even want to know it. It was a little bit of, obviously, you're proud of it as well. But
did you have to go for a trial?
No. Obviously, I trained with them, but just because they wanted me a year earlier already, but I wanted to keep playing with the boys, you know?
Okay.
So I still, I don't know, it sounds a little bit weird, but I never really enjoyed playing with girls.
Why is that?
Don't know. It just made me, I think it's just a really competitive side when you play with boys was missing a little bit when you played with girls back then. So obviously it's I think the level was just not as it was with the boys, you know. For me, I just wanted to compete at the highest level I could, and that was obviously with the best boys in my area.
So you would be playing for, so you were 15 at the time, and you would be playing with the best boys team in that area.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
in competitive games, or were you playing games as well? You weren't just training with them, you were playing competitive games with them as
well? It was like a normal league, and we played against, don't know, Nuremberg, Greuther Fürth, they all like first or second division in this area. And it was just good because you could always see like where you stand a little bit as well. And obviously when you can compete with the best boys in your age at this time, you're aiming for higher goals as well. So for me, it was always, the main goal was to go to the national team at one day to the women national team, not the youth, obviously.
Yeah.
But at this time, then when Bayern called me, it was about making a decision if I'm ready now to go to a women's club or a women's team. And for me, I was really, don't know, how can I say this? I thought like a 15-year-old boy in my head, you know, I behaved like them as well. I was one of them. So it was a really big step for me then all of a sudden being in a team with 30-year-old women, you know, and not being the little girl or boy or something I was back then. So I all of a sudden, it's just the atmosphere completely changed, like playing with grown-up women.
Yeah. So it's great that they were so welcoming and letting you play with them, because I read a story a while back about a Dutch girl who had to pretend to be a boy for like 2 years to actually play. But when you moved to Bayern Munich, what was the standard like at Bayern Munich compared to what you were used to playing before?
This is a question I got asked a lot, but I think the step from this level, from the boys to the first division women's football, wasn't that big, to be honest, because I think...
It was similar.
It was quite similar. So I would say tactical-wise and from the way we trained, it was a little bit more professional, obviously, with Bayern Munich, because the coaches were just better and you trained in a much more professional environment.
And was it full-time?
Not yet. No, because maybe 60, 70, 80% of the girls were working next to football and working 40 hours a week.
Wow, okay,
so
right.
So a full job. And next to this, they trained 4 or 5 times a week and traveled a lot at the weekends to play against Hamburg, which is 8, 9 hours by bus on a weekend. So when you see that generation, women's football generation, it's like they did hell of a lot to just being able to play football, you know? So it was not at all professional at this point. Everyone always says, it's about equal pay and stuff like this. Mm. It's not even that. It's more like having the facilities and having a good pitch you can train on, or having a good time to train on, because we had to wait until all of the youth teams trained. So until the 12, 13, 14 year old boys were done with their session, then the women's team could go on the pitch.
Right.
So, or we had a little corner with the, like we call it like old men's teams. Like
The veterans teams.
Yeah, something like this. Yeah. So we shared a pitch with them most of the times, because this is from, don't know, 7 to 9 p.m. we trained.
Right.
Because early on the pitch weren't empty or for us, you know. So there were so many things. We didn't have a physio then. We didn't have a doctor as well. We maybe had one coach and maybe an assistant coach who were there from time to time, but not always, because they all had a normal job as well on the side. So the facilities and the structures now compared to back then completely changed, and now we can finally do what we want and do it properly and not thinking about, I have to work from 8 to 5 and then rushing to training and not being able to tape my foot because I have a ankle injury or something, because there's no physio, so you have to drive somewhere else before training to get your tape done, and little things like this are changing now finally.
Yeah, so I mean, you were there from 16 through to 24-ish, right? So throughout that time at Bayern Munich, you must have seen a lot of changes between those years.
Yeah, I would say it got better year by year.
Yeah.
So obviously it came a lot with the money. So the better the budget got, the better players you could bring in, the better you had the focus on football, really, the less the players had to work as well. So most of them were really young then, and you got the level kept improving, and the player who came in were better than the players who retired or got sacked or something like this. So yeah, the level obviously got better, but also I think the standing we had in the club got better as well. So all of a sudden we played really up front in the league. So we played for the qualification for the Champions League, for example, and little things like this. We always had to, it was a hard time back then in Bayern. Like, we didn't have a really good standing at the beginning, I would say, but then finally we could train at the same facilities like the boys did and the men's team did. And we could have a little bit more access to their facilities and to use, just their structures as well, and not being completely separated from the club.
Did you feel like you had to fight for respect from the club?
I think every women's team, which is with a men's team, still fight for respect, because there are so many men still in the game. Most of the times it's men, but men clubs in the game who still didn't really accept women's football. For example, now there's a big thing in the media as well in Germany about Borussia Dortmund, or running finally a women's football team, hopefully, because the fans were aiming for this and having a big sheet of paper in the stand saying it's such a big club and doesn't even run a women's football team, because they're just 2 or 3 decision makers in the club who don't want to have it. And I think this shouldn't be the case anymore. And the society, the pressure from society, I think, should be bigger now. And it's increasing now that finally everyone, accepting women's football a little bit more. But I think it's still a battle every day. And there are still so many people in the game who are not really pro women's football, I would say.
Why do you think there are men out there who like football but don't accept women's football? And why do you think that's the case?
Some people still speaking from two complete different sports when they compare women's football to men's football. It's just, obviously, we will never be as strong as them and as fast as them and as physical as them. So there's just a difference from our body states, you know. So, and this will never change. So the game obviously is a little bit not as fast and as, yeah, as hard as the men's football game is. But I think there are so many good things in women's football as well when you're really separated. Like, it's still, some people like it because it's so fair, because the girls are not like pretending to be injured all the time. They're not that big breaks all the time because people argue with the referee or something like this. It's just, it's a really clear, fair sport and right now. And I think this is a really nice side of the women's game, I think, in the moment. But obviously, yeah, I think that we can never compete at that high level. So it's
But why do you think men... So that's obviously some of the advantages of women's football. But why do you think that certain men who make decisions at clubs to not have a women's team, for example, like you just said, Borussia Dortmund, why do you think they would do that? Why do you think they're threatened by women's football? What is the reason for them not wanting to support it?
I think when you just really think economic...
They want to invest the money in it.
Exactly. Obviously, it's a big investment to run a women's football team. And because we are not bringing that much money in, it's maybe not really for them a big benefit to have a women's team. When you just see it from a money standpoint or financial standpoint. So obviously, it's a little bit of a minus business because you have to put in or invest a lot of money to get in players and to run a complete new team, obviously. But obviously, it's still so much cheaper than you would run as if you would run a men's team. But it's, not commercial-wise, maybe it doesn't make so much sense for them. But I think when you see all the positive sides of this, for example, when I played for Wolfsburg was so well-known for their women's team because they are so successful and they were competing always at such a high level and played for the Champions League title every year, for the league title every year. They won the cup, I think, since 8 years every year almost. And it's like, I don't know, there comes a lot of positive representation as well when you run a women's team, I think. And I think it shouldn't be the case anymore that you just refuse to do it at all because you don't fancy, jumping in the game as well. And
When you're at Bayern Munich, and we'll come on to your Wolfsburg time in a minute, but when you're at Bayern Munich, you started to have injury problems with your knee. Yeah. Give us an idea of how much more difficult it is to recover from an injury when you've not got that support network behind you as a man's player would have.
First of all, that was really unlucky because I injured myself when I was first called up for the national team.
Exactly.
So it was a little bit dramatic as well. So
now that's really upsetting. Sad.
It was, and I waited a really long time for finally being called up, and I think I was 21 at this time, and I was just so happy to be finally in the national team now. And I think it happened in the first session after 45 minutes or something. So I ruptured.
How did it happen?
It was completely non-contact injury. So I ruptured my ACL. I was just turning and my foot got stuck in the ground. It's the typical way you normally rupture it. But obviously it was really dramatic for me as well. But just being there gave me a lot of motivation. So I really got positive through my whole rehab process. And
did the club give you all the support you needed? They did. Okay, that's good.
So I got my surgery done, but the club had to pay for this. And it's not like they, don't know, when I think back, they tried to find a different way to do it and not pay for my surgery.
Right.
But it was not so easy, to be honest. It was I could use our physio, I could use our facilities, but they're not full time. So most of the times I put my re-ups or did it at a different place where they can look after me full time and not only an hour a day or something. So I did it in a public place where not only athletes are, but a lot of athletes. And I think it's, on the one side, it's good to not being around your team all the time when you're long-term injured, you know?
But you feel a bit out of it, don't you?
Yeah, that's the thing. Then you, at the same time, you're not really in the team so much as you would like to. So it's a really hard time to find a good balance to be at the team, but not being around your teammates all the time, because all they do is speaking about games and training sessions, and when they did, don't know, made fun in training or something, and you can't really laugh about it because you weren't there.
Yeah.
So it wasn't really bad to do it not at the club, really.
Yeah.
So to do it somewhere else at a different place, because you can get rid of all this stuff in your head and have a little bit different team around you, but you still have a kind of a different team around you, because you work with the same physios, the same trainers every day, and other athletes maybe in different sports, but also footballers, and it's still about football, but in a different environment then. So I think now the structures and the facilities are a lot better than it was back then for players who got injured and can do stuff with their physios at the club and with their trainers at the club and with their, just their stuff, really, because there weren't enough time to look after me, because, they were there to do tapes before training, really, don't know, maybe 30 minute slot or something. And after training, the girls needed treatment as well. So basically in between, they had to look after the girls who were training. Mm. So it wasn't so much time to look after the injured players. So it was a little bit like they do it somewhere else.
How long did it take you to recover from the injury?
So from the first injury, it was about 6-7 months. So I was back in training after 6 months, which is really quick for an ACL. And then I re-ruptured it. So after, I don't know, 8 months or something. So I was maybe 4 weeks back in training and did a game as well.
Yeah.
So in my comeback game, I also scored. So I thought, now the world is good again, and I'm happy now, and everything worked out. And obviously, I rushed a little bit through my rehab because I just wanted to go back to the national team again as well. But that wasn't the best idea I ever had, to be honest. So I should have relaxed a little bit more and gave my body a little bit more time.
Do you think that injury has really held your career back?
I would say, to be honest, yes, because the injuries were always at really bad timings in my career. So being at the national team, finally made it, training really good for 40 minutes, and then being injured with this kind of injury as well, obviously give you a really big setback. And then being back again, but then having an injury again for even longer, the same injury, and even more, was that damage in my knee got me out again for 1.5 years more. So I was then out for maybe, don't know, 2 years or something.
How does that affect you psychologically?
Yeah, so the second rehab straight after was so much harder than the first was, obviously.
Yeah.
Because I had my goal and it was so clear, and everything was good in the knee as well. It always felt good, not having a lot of pain through the process. And the second one was more like when you lay there and it happened again, and you know what you expect now.
Mm.
I think this makes it so much harder, I think, because you know every single step of the process, of the rehab process.
And you've got to go through the whole thing again, basically.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you know already then, this time it takes longer, because your body just needs more time, because when you're out for so long and then again, it's not like you just, don't know, you're just back there and everything's going good again.
Mm. But I mean, because when we talk about injuries with football players, we talk a lot about the physical recovery. So if someone tears a hamstring, we say that's going to be that amount of weeks out and they'll be back at this point. Mm. But no one really talks that much about how it affects you mentally as well. So did you find that when you went to go back on the football pitch again after so long out of the game, in your mind you felt different because you didn't trust your knee, for example? You thought, oh, I don't know if this is going to happen again, type thing.
Yeah, because especially because I ruptured it twice without contact.
Yeah.
It was not like I got brutally fouled or something.
No.
It just happened because
it's quite
turned.
A surprise thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
So then you really doubt your body all the time. So when you back to the movements and the turns and the, don't know, change of directions, don't know, you always think of this. So back then, I would say I always, don't know, thought of my knee. With maybe 90% of my movements I did on the pitch, which is not really helpful because you shouldn't focus on your body. You should focus on what you do with the ball, what your next run look like, or don't know what to do in the next action. And you think more at the beginning about how you could turn, like coordination wise, that you not injure yourself again.
Okay.
And this, to get out of your head, took a long time, I would say. So the process, just being healthy up there in your head mentally, takes a little bit, and trust your body again.
Do you think your over that now?
I would say, yeah, I was over that. But then for a time, it needed maybe half a year or something until I trusted my body completely again. So yeah. Half a year of really full training and full playing again.
Yeah.
And I think I was never that kind of player I've been before, to be honest.
Right.
So every tackling, like every time I got tackled, and also like when I got into tackles, I always thought of my knee, to be honest. Mm. And I think this affected me some little percentage of my game as well, which is not really good, but it was, don't know, I always thought, oh, just don't think of your knee anymore.
Yeah.
It's good, like trust it. And then you get tackled really hard and you feel nothing happened, everything is okay.
Yeah.
You need these kind of tackles as well to be fully trusting your body again.
You've got to go through those processes.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
You always, at the first time you think, oh, like, I don't know, don't need this to tackle me so hard now. But you think, no, that was really good and helpful as well, because when I got through this tackle, nothing can really happen to me anymore.
Yeah.
So, it's a long process. Yeah, it's more the mental side, I think, after long-term injuries than it's really to be fit again, because this just comes after a certain amount of time. But being really clear in your head again and being able to trust your knees and your body again, I think this took longer in my case.
Mm. And you spoke a little bit there about your thought processes when you're playing football. And I ask this to football players quite a lot. When you're on the pitch, are you thinking about what you're doing, or is it all instinctive? Because you play in midfield, right? So you're right in the thick of it all the time. You're right amongst it. When you're out there playing, do you play on instinct, or are you thinking it through in terms of processes?
I think the main goal is to not think of anything you do. So when I have a really good game, or when I think back to my best games I've ever played, I didn't think about anything at all. I just played. So it's kind of the flow you go into when you're competing well and everything turns out well and everything works, and you just do everything automatically and instinctive. And I think this is every game you go in and want to reach that point, that you just fly through the game a little bit, because then everything just happens automatically and naturally, and you don't have to think about really what to do with the ball, because it just happens. And it always, or most of the times, is a correct decision. And I think these are the best games you have. But obviously, when I always have it when I don't have a really good game or something, I think of everything, like, how can I get on the ball? What shall I do when I have the ball?
And you overthink it.
Basically. And you overthink it, obviously, yes.
Yeah.
And this is always what you try to avoid on the pitch, because when it's just happening, it's most of the times it's the best thing to do.
How would you describe yourself as a player?
I would say you would call me here in England a box-to-box player.
Okay, yeah.
So literally, I'm not up front, and I like to have some strikers in front of me. So I want to have the ball on my feet all the time, but I don't dribble so much. I want to give it away and want to have it back again. So give it and receive it again. Mm-hmm. I'm always on the move. Like, I'm always moving and find little gaps between the rows and try to put myself into positions where I can turn and then bring the strikers into the game.
Mm.
So I would always take the final pass before a goal.
Hmm.
So I love to play the final pass who leads to a goal, you know.
What do you call that? What would you call that position in German?
I don't know.
They call it Raumdeuter?
Maybe. A little bit, yeah. Or Spielmacher, like playmaker.
Yeah, Raumdeuter is what? Space investigator.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
I would say this is my biggest strength, that I try to find always the gaps in between, the make it hard to defend me, because I'm always moving.
Yeah.
Because I'm not the most physical player, not the fastest as well.
Mm.
So I need to be clever and be one step ahead in my head.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
So when you ended up at Wolfsburg, who and it's an interesting thing, but I think for people who don't follow women's football very closely, in obviously in men's football, Wolfsburg and Bayern Munich are quite different. But it's kind of the opposite in women's football, right? Mm-hmm. As you mentioned earlier, Wolfsburg are a big women's team, aren't they? So yeah. For you to go there, presumably that was quite a big deal for you as well.
Yeah, I went there when they just won the Champions League.
That's twice, right, yeah.
And the league as well, and the cup. So I think they won the triple, and then they won the double. And then I went there, and so it was, don't know, the best time to really go there.
Did they win more after that or not?
Not the Champions League anymore. So I was twice in a Champions League semi-final.
That's right.
Once in a Champions League final, and I won the cup 4 times. I won the league once, but it could have been a little bit more.
It's not bad, though.
Yeah, it was okay, but I didn't win the Champions League, which still like gets me a little bit, because winning the Champions League means everything, right?
Yeah, and, of course.
But yeah, it's true what you say.
Because was the setup different at Wolfsburg? Was it more professional? Was it? Yeah. It was, okay.
So all of the players were professional. That was the first time that I played, was surrounded by only professional players.
Yeah.
And that was obviously the first time that we had, like, timing-wise, it all focused on football. So we had training at 10 o'clock in the morning, and then everyone went to lunch. That's a little bit different to English football. So we ate alone. So there wasn't lunch at the club. Everyone went home, had lunch, slept a little bit, whatever. And we met again at 3:30 or something. Mm-hmm. So during the day, when normally people at other clubs were working at this time, and you have the second session really late in the evening that you can have meet again, because you need the time in between to work or to go to school or to uni or something like this.
Yeah.
Whereas there, everything focused on the football, and there was... Yeah, the first time that I was in such a professional environment. We had 4 physios there. We had a complete staff of coaches there, full-time coaches as well.
And you were 26 when you signed for them?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's the first time you'd been in that environment at 26?
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I always played professional football, so I've always lived from this and focused on football.
But not all the other players were
but not all the
at
other
Bayern
players,
Munich,
yes.
For example.
Yes.
Okay.
So when I was at Bayern, I finished school, I started studying, so I did stuff, but I didn't work outside football. And this was, I think, nice to just... having, don't know, the same goal, everyone, and not being distracted by, oh, I just had a 10-hour work day,
or
I came home late yesterday because we had to do more work or something. And I really liked this and enjoyed it. And I think that makes a difference, or made the difference, to other clubs at this time.
Yeah, and so Wolfsburg is a time you look back on as, I know it's upsetting because you didn't win the Champions League, but ultimately it's a successful time, though.
Yeah, of course. I had... at one point, I made myself, started every game as well. So I was at one point, because there was a lot of competition there as well, a lot of good players from all over the world as well. So at one point, I performed really good as well. So I was really happy with my performance, played a lot of games. And unfortunately, then I ruptured my syndesmosis ligamentum.
Right.
So again, the surgery, I was out again for 5 months, I think. And that got a little break in my... Wolfsburg time, I think, because then I think I had 1 more year contract or something, and the last year, because of rehab as well and little injuries after a long-term injury that comes as well sometimes, and your muscles don't really work again, and it just took so long, my rehab process, that I didn't really make it back to many games again. So it ended a little bit like, not really, I'll say it was a really happy end or something for me there.
Yeah.
But the time before my injury there was really good. I made my debut for the national team when I played for Wolfsburg. So I was on the focus, playing Champions League all the time was a nice thing to have as well.
Yeah, of course.
Because obviously,
everyone wants to play in the Champions League, right?
Yeah. And you travel a lot. You see a lot from other countries football-wise as well. And it was just a really interesting and, really nice, exciting time, I think.
And then obviously you went to Freiburg for a little bit and then you ended up at West Ham. I mean, I've got a quote here from you which says, to be honest, I rented a convertible car because my plan was to go to the south of Europe, but I ended up here. So... how did you go from that to living in Seven Oaks? You don't need a convertible car in Kent, you know.
I did. So when I came here 1.5 years ago, it was so hot.
I think it
didn't rain for 6 or 7 weeks.
Oh yeah, that summer was warm. Yes. Yeah.
So everything was yellow because the grass, the parks, they were all burned almost, you know. But now to explain this a little bit. So after Wolfsburg, obviously, when I struggled a little bit with injuries and everything at the end, but still played for the national team. I spoke to the national team coach as well in Germany and
because you made your national team debut. We should talk about that. So you waited a long time and you eventually were able to play.
Yeah.
So you'd played at youth team level for a long time.
Yeah.
So how did it feel to play for the national team? Yeah, I could tell because you're already smiling.
I can't hide it, you know?
Yeah.
It just took too long, in my opinion.
Yeah, of course.
Obviously,
but it must be a proud moment, though.
Yeah, it was a really proud moment.
Did your family come and watch it?
Yeah, everyone.
Great.
It was also in Bavaria, where I'm from a little bit. So not really in front of my house or something, but an hour away from where was born and everything. So it was
nice.
Close to home as well, which was even nicer. And we won the game as well, which is nice as well. So I played 2 games and then
Because you were very close to going to the Euros before that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And I don't know. Then that was the first time the team coach, the manager from the national team changed there came in a new one and she really liked the way I play.
Mm-hmm.
And her philosophy was really good for my way of playing as well. So I had big chances to go to the Euros with this team then as well. But then I had so many injuries that I couldn't make it again. So it's always been like, of course, a speculation, but I could have obviously have had a little bit of a better career without all these bad timings of injuries, you know. But this was... I had an offer from Arsenal back then, so I wanted to, before I signed for Freiburg, either Freiburg or Arsenal, but I wanted to stay in the spotlight a little bit more for the national team.
Sure.
So this is when I had a 1 year little break at Freiburg to be seen from the national team coach and everything.
Yeah.
And this is after this year in Freiburg when it didn't really work with the national team anymore and everything. Back then I was, I don't know, 28 already. So it's you aiming for young players as well to educate them, to bring them in the team instead of bringing, don't know, almost 30-year-old players to play for your team. So I kind of understood it as well. So it was okay. But then I thought, okay, now I use football to travel a little bit through the world, you know. I thought, I want to go to a really nice country, sunny country. I love the sun. I love nice cities. I just wanted to really use football as... a travel course a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
And seeing a different country, learning a new language, a new culture, going to, I don't know, Italy, Spain, Portugal, something like this, where the league aren't as good as they are here now in England or in Germany or something, but still on a good level that you can live from it and play professionally, you know? So this is when I got my convertible car because I was close to sign for an Italian team or a Spanish team. So, but then Matt Beer called me, so the West Ham coach.
Sure. And he's a league winning coach, of course, as well, isn't he?
Yes, exactly.
So that's a big pull, right?
But it was not even that. It was more like the way he FaceTimed me and he held the phone all the time so close to his face that I couldn't really see his whole face, you know? That was just like the way he spoke to me and...
Why is that a good thing?
The person is... It's not really a good thing, to be honest. It was more funny.
Yeah.
But the way he convinced me after, I think, 30 seconds on the phone or something. I didn't want to go to England.
Yeah.
I really didn't. I could have gone a year before.
Do you like it now you're here?
Better club. I love it, yeah.
Yeah, okay,
and I could... like, don't know, see myself living here a little bit longer than for football, you know, or even after football. So I really, don't know, fell in love a little bit with the crazy football atmosphere here in England.
How different are the facilities and the standard compared to Germany to here?
Yeah, completely different. So when I saw all the West Ham facilities after Matt Beard called me, I went here and to look and see the facilities and to speak to him, and he showed me around, and that convinced me really, because the pitches here are a dream, you know, compared to what I know, compared to Italian, Spanish, Portugal leagues, like they so much worse, you know. Most of the time you play on artificial grass, something.
And if you've had injuries, you don't want
to be doing
that.
I thought of my knee as well a little bit. And then I saw the pitch at Rush Green, where the men's train as well, and our facilities there, and we have everything. We have a canteen where we can eat. We have the physios there. We have the best pitches there. We have a really nice gym there as well. So everything was set up, and going into a professional league, the first professional league in Europe as well, made for me the decision that I take this one. And even when I already have my convertible car, I take this to England then.
You just got you can never really relax in a convertible car in the UK, because at any minute it could just start raining.
But we have the same in Germany. It's not like that.
It's true, true.
I think you just have a really bad image. It's like prejudice maybe a little bit, that it rains all the time, because it's the same in Germany, I would say. London and Munich or something is kind of the same weather.
So when do you think, I mean, I know you've got a bit of an injury at the moment, so when do you think you'll be back playing again, and what are your plans for the kind of near future?
Yeah, so the plan is that obviously, I had a 12 months rehab now behind me, and I just want to be back on the pitch as soon as possible again to make some more games for West Ham as well this season. And so from January onwards, I think I'll be back playing, not like maybe every game or always 90 minutes, but at least at a certain amount of time that I can be help the squad and help the team and be, don't know, on the bench, train, maybe not every single session with the team, but don't know, I have to see how my knee really does and how my knee works with all the loadings now. And also when I play some minutes, how it reacts then. But I'm quite positive that it will be some more minutes,
Yeah, okay, good. And what do you think, like, I mean, you've been playing football for a long time now, 15 years or something. What do you think, like, how do you look back on your career? I know you've still got some time to play, but how do you look back on your career and what you've achieved? I know it's been maybe a bit bittersweet, but you must be proud of a lot of things you've done.
I would call it bittersweet. This is nice. I take this one because there were like really good parts of it, like really, 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 really good parts. Like when I played for almost the best teams in Europe, almost won the Champions League, won a lot of like national league titles, made it to the national team.
Yeah.
But still, when I compare my career to other careers from players I've played with, or see what I could have achieved, you know, and obviously, I have a lot of injuries, and I don't take them as an excuse. But obviously, without them, it might have gone up a little bit higher, you know, with achievements in terms of more titles, don't know, more caps for the national team, maybe maybe playing a tournament. That would have been always my dream, you know, playing a, don't know, in the Euros or Olympic Games. They won the Olympic Games at one point, the German national team, and that are really, really nice things to have as well, you know, when you look back on your career. But don't get me wrong, like I'm really happy. Obviously, the good thing with football now, because I always wanted to be in football, now is a time when I think of what can I do after my career. And I think football still, don't know, I'm still so passionate with football that I could not imagine living without football. So the good thing now that it gets a little bit more professional, that you can have a life in football without playing football.
So what do you think, like media or coaching or?
Media, coaching, don't know, things like this. Even, don't know, a lot of players, don't know, struggle with finding a really good agent to look after them.
Yeah.
Having a good network for players, building up like a medical network as well, because this is still a thing you can improve a lot. Also, I studied sports science, don't know, looking for more prevention programs to help girls not having so many ACL ruptures, for example, because this is still such a big topic in women's football, the ACL injuries all the time. I think they are 6 to 9 times higher than the men.
Is that rates. Right? Yeah. I didn't know that.
It's crazy, because every year you can just wait for at least 5, 6, 7 girls rupture their ACL in the league. And I think this is a big, big area where everyone can still improve so much.
Needs more research and more look into how it can be prevented.
Yes, exactly.
Amazing. All right, Julia, thank you so much for coming in and speaking to us.
Thank you so much.
Have you enjoyed it?
Yes, I loved it. I could speak so much more, you know.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit. And he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.